From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We do have a great show for you today. We do. We have a freshly minted Nobel laureate, astrophysicist Adam Riess, joining us later. But first, we wanted to give a big Wait, Wait welcome to Gary Nell. He's the new CEO of NPR. He came to us from Sesame Workshop. That's true. He did a good job there. It's going to be a tough transition for him. We're told right away, in his first visit to HQ, there was some difficulty when Mr. Nell tried to stick his hand up Steve Inskeep to make him talk. But you're no puppet. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Jason Dockler from Tiburon, California.
Oh, Tiburon. Beautiful place there in the bay.
Yes, it is.
It's gorgeous.
Today, the rain has stopped, and the sun is out shining, and the Navy's Blue Angels have been practicing for this weekend's Fleet Week celebration.
Oh, it's Fleet Week in San Francisco.
It is, in fact, yes.
Yes. That's a quiet, peaceful time, I know. Well, welcome to the show, Jason. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to the man behind the amazingly successful Too Beautiful to Live podcast, Mr. Luke Burbank.
Hey, Jason.
Next up, a comedian performing at the Mardi Gras Casino in Hallandale, Florida on October 22nd. Ms. Paula Poundstone is here.
Jason.
And lastly, the author most recently of Don't Vote, It Just Encourages the Bastards, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hello, Jason.
Jason, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I am.
All right. Here is your first quote.
Magical. Wonderful. Pretty amazing. Great. Terrific. Revolutionary. Extraordinary. Unbelievably great. Wonderful. Very nice. Gorgeous.
Those were the very enthusiastic words of a man who introduced a new product last year. He died this week. Who was it?
That was Steve Jobs.
It was Steve Jobs, yes. He died. The legacy of Steve Jobs is two decades of great consumer electronics and millions of TV screens covered with fingerprints, because kids now expect they can touch any screen they see and it will start playing Angry Birds. But Jobs had a reputation for both enthusiasm, as you heard, and for being very, very demanding in his career. Right now, we assume he's berating St. Paul for his poor design. What's with this pearly stuff? Make them brushed aluminum. And please, let's not call them gates.
A little piece of theology there, Peter. That's St. Peter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
St. Peter? St. Paul doesn't do that?
St. Paul doesn't do that. He has other duties.
Right.
The thing is, it's a union shop.
You know what?
Very specific duties.
There have been cutbacks. Now, apparently, Paul is taking on more than one task.
Actually, I'm sure. Anyway, Jobs came to an end before his time, much like a call placed in an iPhone. It's true, though.
Yeah. Part of me wanted to be offended by that joke, but part of me knew calling my friends to tell them how offended I was on my iPhone was not going to work.
I know. All right, very good. Here's your next quote.
I think Hail to the Chief needs a little bit fresher sound. It won't be hip-hop, but I might put in some gospel beats.
That was a presidential candidate saying he'll take a fresh look at the president's theme song if elected. And this week, he actually jumped in front of some Republican polls. Who is it?
Herman Cain.
Herman Cain, yes! It was Herman Cain. Mr. Cain, the former talk radio host and head of Godfather's Pizza, is now leading Mitt Romney by as much as 10 points in some state polls. This shows first that...
Well, you ever order pizza from Romney?
Well...
So
what happened to Perry?
Perry, as you may have heard, he came into the race about 6 weeks ago, you know, immediately rocketed to the front, became the front runner, and then he actually started speaking in venues where people could hear him.
Yeah.
And that caused a problem.
Tripped him up. Yeah. How late can someone get in? Because what seems to be the case here is that if people don't know them,
Right.
If they
haven't, like them.
Right.
So it's like Republican candidates as first wives, basically. Till you get to know them, they're great.
Apparently there's a lot of first wives in here.
Yeah.
Does Herm Cain have a lot of political experience before this or any political experience before this?
Herman Cain was a businessman. He rose up in the company that owned Godfather's Pizza, became its CEO.
It just seems so interesting that politics is like the only area where having zero experience in it is somehow a positive. Like, would you want like a heart surgeon who'd been working hanging drywall for the last like 20 years?
In other campaign news, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, after much flirtation, told the Republican Party he wasn't going to run after all. He also said, and this is true, that he did not mind fat jokes at his expense as long as they were funny. All right.
Okay, panel.
What are you saying? Like his blood type is Ragu?
Yeah, I'm saying that.
You're saying like the Jordache pony on his jeans is real? What are you saying, like, he eats biscuits like they're Tic Tacs? I got a million. I didn't even know this was going to be a question. That's the disturbing part.
Yeah, man. I tell you, you know, I so wanted Mitch Daniels because I wanted to be taller than the president. And then I wanted Chris Christie because, you know, as a fallback position, I'll be slimmer than the president.
Right.
You know?
It's just, well, it looks like you can still be brighter than the president.
Moving on. Here is your last quote.
Oh, we're just here, like, you know, protesting what's going on. Everything. Take your pick.
That was somebody quoted in the New York Observer, one of the increasing number of people who are protesting where?
At Wall Street.
Yes, indeed. Wall Street, yes. The Occupy Wall Street movement started with less than 100 guys, and it's grown to thousands in lower Manhattan and across the country, and they're getting more press coverage. For example, NPR covered the fact that the police won't let the protesters use any amplification, so they use something they call a human megaphone. Listen.
My question is more pragmatic.
My question is more pragmatic.
Should we not just buy fabric?
Should we not just buy fabric?
And construct sleeping bags?
And construct sleeping bags.
So this is what they do. They shout it out to the rest of the crowd. It's like this huge game of telephone. By the time they were done, they had bought Patrick and used him to obstruct scrambled eggs.
kids today, they need better drugs.
Is that the problem?
That's the problem. Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Look at the protests from my era.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knew how to throw a protest. They used to shoot us.
Yeah, is that...
Did you see all those airline pilots who showed up?
No, I didn't see them.
It was like something like 500 airline pilots showed up in uniform and marched. And it was, I just saw photos of it. It was the most orderly protest I've ever seen. I was just imagining like how laconic it must have been. Like on the left side, you'll see the capitalist pigs. And, this is what democracy looks like. We hope you enjoy your protest. Sit back, enjoy yourself.
Yes. Carl, how did Jason do on our quiz?
Jason, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize. Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Luke, among all the coverage of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie announcing he wouldn't run for president, we got to hear the story of an 11-year-old kid in the Garden State running for student council president at his school. And he sought Christie's advice at a town hall event on how to win elections. And Christie gave him some professional electoral advice. It was really adorable. One problem, though, what then happened?
Pretend like you might run in the junior high election?
No, Christie's advice was...
not do it?
Yes, exactly. Tease them. Say no with your mouth, but yes with your eyes.
That's what he said?
No, it's not what he said.
Oh.
No, he's...
Luke, you got kind of a binary situation here, outcome-wise.
Oh, yeah, right. The kid lost.
Exactly. Sixth grader Zach Martini approached Christie at a town hall meeting.
Wait, a kid named Zach Martini
didn't
win?
That's his name? Yeah.
I'm voting for him for president.
Absolutely.
And he asked Governor Christie for advice in running for student council, and Christie told him to gather a lot of supporters, put up colorful posters, and demonize the teachers because it's always worked for me, he said. Anyway, Martini's platform was promising 100% unemployment rate. Sixth graders don't actually want to work. And also a double-dip recess.
I ran in the sixth grade for class president, and Amy Hayes won. And they offered me the vice presidency, which I felt was kind of throwing me a bone. I said, what are the odds of a sixth grader being assassinated?
It's time for the Wait, Wait, Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Laughing Laura from Marquette, Iowa.
Laughing Laura?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I figured that was going to happen. All right.
I'm a teacher of laughter yoga.
You are kidding me.
I am not.
We understood that laughing yoga, which we talked about last week in the show, is a practice of yoga in which you don't actually bend yourself in interesting ways. You just laugh.
Exactly. If you can laugh and you can breathe, you can do it. It's the best exercise.
So is there any actual yoga involved?
Yogic breathing, that's it.
I can do this.
Look.
You can.
I think we should not look a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah.
Let's just proceed.
Okay.
Laura, you're going to play our bluff game, and that means that our panelists are going to tell you some stories, only one of which is true. Carl, what is Laura's topic?
Once upon a time, there was a Welsh farmer who grew a giant rutabaga.
This week, we read about a farmer in Cardiff, Wales, who broke a record with his giant 85-pound prize rutabaga. That was amazing enough. But what caught our attention is what happened next. Each of our panelists is going to finish the story of the Welshman's monstrous rutabaga. But while the rutabaga is real, only one of the stories is. Guess that true ending to the story you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine, or voicemail, or whatever you might have. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
All right. First, let's hear the story of the rutabaga from P.J. O'Rourke.
To be precise, the rutabaga weighed 38.9 kilograms. Unfortunately, EU root vegetable regulations, Article 21, Section 47, limit individual rutabaga size to 36 kilos, thus preventing sale of the rutabaga within the European Union. This was a shame because rutabaga prices, as with many commodities, are nearing record highs, 46.2 euros per kilo. Furthermore, because Neil's rutabaga seed had cost 10 cents, British Inland Revenue ruled that he had made a 24,000% profit growing the vegetable. And what with a 28% value-added tax, he owed the government $6,720. Neil sought a free market solution, engaging in a complex series of credit swaps with sovereign debt derivative traders. And you know the result from this week's headlines. The entire assets of Greece's central bank is one giant rutabaga.
The rutabaga causes tax problems for the farmer in question and ends up in Greece propping up their economy. Your next story of a Welshman's rutabaga comes from Paula Poundstone.
Ian Neal's giant rutabaga seems to have struck a chord in many. Just days after he posted pictures of it online, people began showing up on his farm to see the amazing root vegetable for themselves. Naturally, I let them come by for a rutabaga visit, says Mr. Neal. But one day I look out and see some young folks bowing down to the thing. They appeared to be worshiping it. Within a few weeks, a bewildered Neil had crowds of rutabaga worshippers on his farm. Valkyrie Page visits the rutabaga once a week. "I don't know that I'd call it worshipping," she says. I just confess my sins to it and ask it for help. It doesn't judge me. It just feels good to be with the rutabaga. It has changed my life. I will never eat another vegetable. "I already don't eat meat. Honestly, I'm hungry," says Jason DeBry. Shifting a small pebble from one side of his mouth to the other. "I'm here to ask the rutabaga for help." Those visiting the rutabaga seem to leave serene and satisfied. Diana Perry walks happily towards me, explaining, "Look here, I've been visiting the rutabaga for only 2 weeks, and I used to walk kind of funky. You see, with my foot turned out like that. Now I walk like this. It's all the rutabaga." "It's the hard times," claims Neil. "People are going around the bend. It's gotta be. I raised an enormous cucumber 2 years ago, and no one so much as dropped by to say hello to it."
The rutabaga inspiring people to come. Treat it with reverence and worship. Your last story of a Welshman and his rutabaga comes from Luke Burbank.
Neil says he was shocked when he realized just how massive the brassica napobrassica he'd cultivated was. But things got even weirder when the retired farmer received a personal video message from none other than Snoop Dogg. Yes, that's right, the Snoop Dogg, also known as Rapparus Americanus. Snoop recorded a YouTube video praising Neil's horticulture and offering him backstage passes to an upcoming show in Cardiff in exchange for green thumb tips on how the rapper could also grow giant vegetables. That's right, vegetables. In what obviously was just some weird unrelated coincidence, the dog father recorded the video message in front of a backdrop of hundreds of marijuana plants. Neil says he's flattered by the attention, but is passing on the chance to meet Snoop, claiming he's more of a country and western fan. Snoop reportedly took the brush off in stride, spending the afternoon playing video games, eating pizza rolls, and contemplating how weird it is that we, like, have fingers.
All right. Here are your three choices, Laura. From PJ O'Rourke, the rutabaga causing the farmer in question tremendous tax problems and him giving it to Greece. From Paula Poundstone, the rutabaga inspiring well worshippers to come and pay it obeisance. Or from Luke Burbank, Snoop Dogg himself being inspired by this feat of horticulture to ask the farmer for help with his own backyard growing projects. Which of these is the real outcome of this giant rutabaga being grown?
I'm going to have to pick Luke's story because I saw Snoop Dogg's video myself.
Okay, you're pretty confident. Well, let's see if you're right. Let's listen to this.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neal in Cardiff for breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got 2 tickets for you when I get to town.
That was rapper and gardener Snoop Dogg giving a shout out to farmer Ian Neal on YouTube. You're right. You saw it and you knew it. Congratulations. You got it right. Well, Laura, you have in fact won Carl's Voice. Congratulations. You've done it. You've also earned a point for Mr. Luke Burbank for his telling of that story. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you for playing.
And the chances are good. A vegetable will respond to you. Rutabaga, 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 rutabaga.
And now the game where we invite on smart people and ask them dumb questions. Astronomer Adam Riess had already won a MacArthur Genius Grant, plus just about every other prize in his field. And since this week, he was named co-winner of a Nobel Prize in Physics. Pretty much the only thing left for him is a victory on our show. So here he is, Dr. Adam Riess. Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So we're flattered, and we know this must be a busy week for you, being a new Nobel Prize winner. Can you lay out in simple terms that even, well, I could understand what exactly your prize was for, the nature of your discovery?
Sure. Well, we've known for a long time that the universe is expanding, but about 15 years ago, my colleagues and I discovered that It is expanding faster and faster. That is, the universe is accelerating, and that was not expected, but is now attributed to this mysterious stuff called dark energy.
All right.
Which seems to make up about 70% of the universe.
And but we have no idea why. Could it be that they're fleeing us? Could it be that they've seen, like, toddlers in tiaras and they're like, let's get away from those guys?
Right. It's tempting to think that, but what we've learned about the universe, wherever you are in the universe, it looks like everything is fleeing from you.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's not me. I was worried.
Yeah, honestly.
Dr. Reese, just a kind of serious question, because I'm kind of an amateur student of astronomy. How hard was it for you guys to blow up the Death Star?
Well, when you turn the Hubble Space Telescope around to focus the sun's light on it, it's not too hard.
Oh, really? Okay. That was brilliant. I mean, isn't it bizarre though to find out that 73% of the observable universe is actually invisible? We have no idea what it is.
Yes.
Yes? That's it? I thought you cosmologists were able to draw out vast metaphorical understandings of the universe from these discoveries, but it's just...
Right. No, it really is. You know, it's not just the 73%. It's the other... There's a 25% chunk in there called dark matter. We don't know what that stuff is either, so...
Well, wait a minute. 73% of the universe is... So you're telling us that everything that we see in the universe, when we look out, we see all these galaxies and all this stuff out there, that's 3%?
That's right. We're really just the frosting on a cake, and we don't know what's inside the cake.
Ooh.
I don't know about you, but this makes me want to curl up in a ball and weep. I mean, that's... I thought I was insignificant already, but this is getting worse.
But we do have names for everything, and that's important.
Okay.
Why? They're not going to... Why? Why is it important to have names for everything? They're not going to come when you call it.
It'd be funny. Wouldn't it be great?
Well,
if
why do you name your cat? Come on.
It'd be great. No, maybe that could reverse the expansion of the universe. You'd be like Andromeda, and you whistle, and it stops and it comes back. You could try that.
What made you want to be a physicist?
Well, you're an astrophysicist. Right?
Oh, an astrophysicist. Sorry.
Right, that was just an insult before.
I know. You know, I'm sorry. No, and I knew that. Jeez. So you're not... okay, so what made you want to be an astrophysicist?
I think the mystery of what's out there in the universe is just very compelling.
You made the mystery bigger.
And hence more compelling.
Gave it a name, though, as I said.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
So tell us, Adam, about what this week's been like. How did you find out you won the Nobel?
Around 5:30, you get a call from Swedish-sounding people. And unless you ordered some IKEA furniture recently, you expected probably the Nobel Prize.
And so you had won a MacArthur Genius Grant, which is pretty cool, and a bunch of other significant awards. Is the Nobel Prize cooler?
I think they're all great. Each time any one of them comes, it seems like a miracle. So I think they're all really...
Have you tried them out in the bars?
I haven't done that test yet. I'll let you know.
Oh, here, let me pay for the drink. I'm sorry, do you take Swedish kroner? Because I happen to have gotten a big pile of them for the Nobel Committee.
Right, well, I've been trying the genius grant. I'm a genius thing, and it hasn't been cutting a lot of ice at home.
Really? Well, Dr. Adam Reese, a Nobel Prize winner, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Are you there? Hello?
Yeah.
you're so attentive. Yes? Hello? No, that was the name of the game, see, because we wanted to pay a small tribute to the man who invented the iPhone who passed away this week. So we're going to go back in time to speak about another great innovator in cell phones, the guy who invented the cell phone. Back in 1973, inventor Martin Cooper of Motorola placed the first modern cell phone call on a Motorola product that he invented in New York City. We're going to ask you three questions about that historic day. Get at least two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Ready to do this? All right. Carl, who is Adam Reese playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Stephen Drews of Lapeer, Michigan.
All right. Here's your first question. Now, that first cell phone call was the result of many, many years and lots of money sunk into engineering and research. To celebrate his team's achievement, Dr. Cooper placed that first call to whom? A, to his wife to say he was stuck and would be home late. B, to his mother to apologize for not having called in 5 years. Or C, to his rival at another company to rub it in.
I am going to have to go with C.
You're going to go with C, to his rival?
Yeah.
You'd be correct. Mr. Cooper, as I said, worked for Motorola. He called the head of Bell Labs' cell phone project. The call was not transcribed, but we believe it went something like, nya, 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 nya. Next question. The first cell phone had a battery that only lasted 20 minutes, but Dr. Cooper said that was not a problem. Why not? A, it was so heavy your arm would give out before the battery did. B, you could buy spare batteries from Motorola for only $350 each. Or C, quote, I can't imagine anyone will ever want to use one of these for more than 20 minutes a day, right?
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B. You could buy spare batteries at the bargain price of $350?
Yeah.
No. You're going to second guess this guy? Nobel Prize, people. Is that your final choice, B?
Yes.
I'm afraid you're incorrect. He said, Dr. Cooper said, that the battery didn't matter because it was so heavy your arm would give out before the battery did.
No!
The thing weighed 2.5 pounds. Imagine holding a quart of milk to your head. About the size, shape, and weight.
What do you mean, imagine?
Yeah. It's called a hangover, Peter. This is how Paula tries to find the missing children. Where are you? Come in! Just talk into my ear, darling. Tell me where you are. All right. This is exciting. You have one more question to go. You get this right, you win it all. All right. Also on that day, Dr. Cooper was the first person to do something on a cell phone that millions of people do to this day. What was it? A, he used the bathroom while talking on the phone and lied about it. B, he pretended he couldn't hear somebody he didn't want to talk to anymore. Or C, he almost got killed while crossing the street and talking on the phone.
I am going to have to go with C.
You're going to go with C, almost got killed crossing the street?
Sure.
You're right!
Ah. Wow.
They did the demonstration on the streets of New York, and he said, quote, I made numerous calls, including one where I crossed the street while talking to a New York radio reporter, probably one of the more dangerous things I've ever done in my life, unquote. Carl, how did Dr. Adam Reese do on our quiz?
He's a winner here, Peter. He had 2 correct answers, so he wins for Stephen Drews.
Well done.
All right.
You've done it. MacArthur Genius Grant Nobel Prize. Now you've won in our quiz. I think you can take the rest of your life off. Adam Reese is a professor of astronomy and physics at Johns Hopkins University. He is, as of this week, a Nobel laureate in physics. Dr. Adam Reese, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Bye, Adam.
Thank you. In just a minute, Carl is awarded the Nobel Prize for his contributions to the rhymic sciences in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, it's time for the game we call...
Science Marches On.
The Ig Nobel Prizes were awarded last week for what's called improbable research. These real prizes recognize real acts of important scientific research around the world. We're going to ask each of you about one of the winners. Get your question right, you get a point. All right, PJ, you're up first. The Ig Nobel Physiology Prize went to a team of European researchers who made an important discovery about animals. Was it which of these? A, that turtles, unlike us, do not suffer from contagious yawning. B, that kangaroos, not unlike us, are always losing stuff in their pouches. Or C, that dogs lick themselves like that just to make you uncomfortable.
I'm voting for the turtles.
You're right. It was the turtles. fact, the study was called No Evidence of Contagious Yawning in the Red-Footed Tortoise. So now you know if your tortoise is yawning, it's probably just bored. All right, Paul, a one prize went to a Japanese team who invented something amazing. Which of these? A, a reinforced manlier kimono called the Kimano. B, the Wasabi Alarm, an alarm that awakens people with a pungent horseradish cloud. Or C, a translator which makes Japanese commercials make sense to non-Japanese people.
Wow. Maybe C?
No, it was this Wasabi Alarm Clock.
Whoa!
It's meant to wake you up if there's a fire or other emergency. Odd, because if there's one thing that qualifies as an emergency, it's a pungent wasabi cloud blowing in your face. Yeah.
I'll take smoke inhalation.
Yeah, really?
For the block.
And that, yeah. and the smell of the wasabi would wake you up?
Yeah, apparently that's the idea.
Huh.
It's a wasabi alarm clock.
Wow.
All right. Luke, this one is about the biology prize winner. Which of these amazing discoveries about insects is real? A, that certain male beetles regularly mistake beer bottles for female beetles and try to mate with them. B, that mosquitoes have a sophisticated Yelp-like system for rating different humans' blood. Or C, that spiders, surprisingly, also find spiders to be creepy.
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, that mosquitoes have a sophisticated Yelp-like system for rating different humans' blood.
I've read the comments on Yelp, and I feel like some of them were written by single-cell organisms.
There you are. No, the answer is actually A, the beetles occasionally mate with beer bottles, mistaking them for female beetles.
Which is weird, because humans use beer bottles to make mating mistakes.
That's true.
With other humans.
And so, in a way, the whole animal kingdom yes. is kind of linked together.
And, yeah. This study was called Beetles in the Bottle and was either flattering to beer bottles or unflattering to female beetles. So, panelists, thank you for your playing, and to the Ig Nobel Committee, thanks for bringing recognition to these important works of science. All right, panel, time for some more questions for you from this week's news. Luke, an elderly man in Britain escaped an attack with only minor injuries, but police arrested his family for attempted murder. How did the police know the family planned to do him harm?
It was in their Christmas letter.
That's very old-fashioned.
It was like they were Facebook page talking about it,
almost,
or somehow blog
almost.
Tweeting
well,
about it.
Well, the problem is that they didn't know how to go about murdering somebody. So
they looked it up online.
They Googled it.
They Googled it, yes. Yeah. What the family did was they Googled the phrase, easiest way to kill an old person.
In fairness, who hasn't?
Yes. Police looking into the assault found the old man's adopted daughter and her children had Googled the phrases easiest way to kill an old person, 10 easy ways to kill someone with no trace, and dangerous drugs for the elderly. And even worse, when they put in the search phrase, then they just clicked on Google's I'm feeling murdery button.
This is not doing any good in terms of the animus that already exists between the elderly and the internet.
That's true.
Like, my grandmother already doesn't trust the internet, and she doesn't even know what I've been Googling about her.
PJ, in an attempt to curtail rising divorce rates in Mexico City, government officials are considering passing a law that allows couples there to do what?
I need a hint.
Well, it's like leasing instead of buying, if you will.
You can lease a wife?
Yes, basically. You can get married for just 2 years or another short period of time. You know what your mother told you? Why buy the cow when you can lease the milk for 2 years? Let's say...
We had different mothers.
Apparently. Let's say you like a guy, but you're not sure, right? And so you're
well,
a young
lady. That would confuse me right away.
I understand that. I'm using the more general. You say you're
I
a young
see.
Lady, you like a guy, you're not okay. sure about him.
You like a person.
You like a person. So you can do in Mexico City, if this goes through, you can do a 2-year marriage, and when your contract expires, you either renew or you just walk away, no harm done. Although, apparently, it's not specifically 2 years. You can negotiate the length of the limited-term contract, which will make proposals really interesting. Like, darling, I love you, and I want to spend the rest of my next 2.5 years with you. Two and a half to three.
With an option to renew.
An option to renew.
That's how much I love you, dear.
Exactly.
I think it's just going to make people try harder. I think it's brilliant.
Well, that's true, because it'll be just like in sports. Guys will get into the second year. It's like, oh, my God, it's a contract year.
Yeah.
It's true.
Exactly right.
I'm gonna be a free agent, right? You know, you need to up your game, up your performance, start doing the dishes.
Exactly.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't go with other boys. And don't tell me what.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and also our upcoming shows on the road in Indianapolis, October 27th, and Lexington, Kentucky, on December 8th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Chris King from Livingston, Montana.
Well, it's beautiful out there. What do you do in Livingston?
I am the development director for the Stafford Animal Shelter.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Because you're in Montana, is it just cats and dogs, or do you also have, like, bison?
Well, we're actually the only shelter in the region that takes in animals other than cats and dogs. So we have ferrets and iguanas and parakeets, and somebody brought in what they thought was an exotic animal, and it turned out to be a large pack rat.
Really? What did they think it was?
They thought that it was a chinchilla.
Oh, look,
oh,
honey.
I'll tell you, you give your wife a pack rat coat, and you will find out the difference.
Well, welcome to the show, Chris. Carl Castle now is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly and two of the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
I am so ready.
Here's your first limerick.
The food that this TV ad flogs will not make the fine dining blogs. It's an ultra-high pitch that makes ears and tails twitch. It's an ad aimed directly at...
dogs!
Yes! This will be relevant to you. The makers of Beneful dog food, very good, have made the first ever TV commercial aimed at the individuals actually eating their food, the dogs. The ads feature a high-pitched whistle only dogs can hear, and they go nuts, and the stupid humans then believe the dogs are going nuts for the pictures of the dog food, and they buy the stuff. If this works, beer companies might start broadcasting pictures of women in bikinis to trick women into thinking that their husbands actually like beer.
We actually played the audio of this on the radio show that I do, just, and we told the listeners to gather the pets around the radio just to see what the effect would be, and no one got any positive reaction from their dogs. One person said their cat threw up a fur ball.
Here is your next limerick.
We know answers because we are not dumb, but we signal like Fonzie, our chum. Raised arms in the school are far too uncool. To get called on, we stick up a...
ooh, wait, wait, don't tell me.
A thumb, yes. Yes, it's thumb. Burlington Junior School in England has revolutionized classroom instruction by banning students from raising their hands. Instead, they're being told to give a Fonzie-style thumbs up when they want to indicate an answer. School officials claim hand-raising is both distracting and allows those Hermione Granger's types to dominate the classroom. The Fonzarelli system is less intrusive, but has thrown the school's film criticism class into chaos. Here is your last limerick.
In Vegas, where we've all but banned clocks, the tourists spend hours smashing grand rocks. We've set up a rig that allows you to dig, and grown men come and play in our...
sandbox!
Yes, a Las Vegas company knows how annoying it is that your kid's sandbox is only for your kids, which is why they've built an adult-sized sandbox called Dig This. For a few hundred dollars, you can eat all the sand you want and play around with fully operational excavators and bulldozers and a giant box of sand, while your kids stare longingly from over on the side, drinking coffee and lamenting the passage of time. Carl, how did Chris do in our quiz?
Well, Chris, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your answering machine or voicemail. Congratulations.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you. You're my favorite.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Luke Burbank has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. P.J. O'Rourke has 3. Paula Poundstone has 2.
I see. All right, then, Paula, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when you begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. At a press conference on Thursday, President Obama said lawmakers should explain themselves if they are against his blank.
Jobs bill.
Right. In an audio recording released Thursday, fugitive former leader Blank called on Libyans to resist
Gaddafi.
The new leadership. Yes. Testifying on Capitol Hill, Blank told Congress the Federal Reserve is prepared to take more steps to help the economy.
Bernanke?
Right. After he compared President Obama to Hitler, ESPN announced it was parting ways with Blank.
Hank Williams Jr.
Right. A 23-year-old candidate for the Polish parliament put out an ad featuring her blanking.
Dancing.
Stripping, actually.
Yeah.
This past weekend in Illinois, Leonard Nimoy attended his last blank convention ever, he says.
Star Trek convention?
Right. The Nobel Foundation will allow Dr. Ralph Steinman to retain his Nobel Prize in Medicine, even though he blanked 3 days before it was awarded.
He died.
Right. Police in Britain were shocked to pull over a man driving while using a laptop, drinking coffee, and blanking at the same time.
Writing down answers to radio quiz questions.
You're exactly right. Very impressive.
Whoa. Powerball.
That was remarkable. A crackdown on distracted drivers also netted drivers talking on their cell phones, texting, and, quote, eating a pear with a knife. Carl, how did Paula do on our show?
Paula had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers.
Wow.
14
Woo-hoo.
More points. She now has 16 points, and Paula has the lead.
All right. So.
I just give up right now.
PJ, you're up next.
Okay.
Fill in the blank. To pay for the jobs bill, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid proposed a 5.6% surtax on blank.
Democrats.
No, millionaires. Afghan intelligence officials said Wednesday that they had foiled an attempt to assassinate blank.
Armand Karzai.
Right. Officials in New York are investigating what caused a blank to crash into the East River on Tuesday.
Helicopter?
Right. A Georgia man attempting to rob a convenience store was arrested after he failed to notice blank.
Is that he didn't have a gun?
No, the uniformed police officer who was standing behind him in line. On Thursday, the president of Bank of America defended his company's plans to charge a $5 a month fee to blank card users.
To debit card users?
Yes. In his first endorsement since his sex scandal 2 years ago, golfer Blank signed a deal with Rolex.
Tiger Woods?
Yes. Viewers of the BBC Two show The Great British Bake Off were shocked to see Blank during the show.
A naked woman jump out of a cake.
No. A naked squirrel. Joanne Wheatley's pistachio meringues may have won the Bake Off, but all anybody could talk about afterwards was this squirrel who wandered onto the outdoor set, stood up, and showed off an impressive set of acorns he had not yet stored away for winter. Carl, how did PJ do in the quiz?
PJ had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 11 points, but Paula still has the lead with 16.
I feel the universe expanding.
So how many, then, does Luke need to take this away from Paul at the last minute?
Well, he needs at least 6 to tie, but 7 to win outright.
Here we go, then, Luke. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, former Alaska Governor Blank announced that she would not be running for president.
Sarah Palin.
Right. After being acquitted in Italian court on Monday, Blank returned home to Seattle.
Amanda Knox.
Right. After negotiations broke down on Tuesday, the Blank canceled the entire preseason.
NBA.
Right. For the first time ever, this year's Oktoberfest celebration in Cullman, Alabama will feature Blank.
Beer.
Right. The Coast Guard is investigating a Florida tourism company that accidentally blanked 2 tourists while they were scuba diving.
Left Behind.
Yes. This week, NBC's The Playboy Club became the first new TV show of the season to be blanked.
Canceled.
Right. After months of focus groups and brainstorming, a consulting firm has freshened up the image of Chattanooga Metropolitan Airport by renaming it Blank.
The Chattanooga train station.
No. The Chattanooga Metropolitan Airport will now be known as the Chattanooga Airport. According to one airport official, quote, it's like Chattanooga is getting into the modern era, unquote. Other plans to bring the airport into the modern era include getting rid of those airplane conductors with their pocket watches and updating their fleet of horse-drawn planes. Carl, did Luke do well enough to win?
He needed at least six to tie, and Luke had six correct answers. So with 16 points, Luke Burbank and Paula Poundstone are this week's co-champions.
Well done.
There it is!
How about a sudden-death playoff? Go on. Sudden death playoff.
Luke is Googling, how do you kill the person you tied with? In just a minute, now that Chris Christie and Sarah Palin both announced they won't be running for president, we're going to ask each of our panelists to explain to America why they are choosing not to run for president. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at progressive.com. Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And to the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman is our benevolent overlord, and Wait's executive producer is Mr. Michael Danforth. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Hannah Withers. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Now, panel, why aren't you running for president? PJ O'Rourke.
I was afraid that if I ran that the press would find out that Sarah Palin is my love child.
Paula Poundstone.
I like to tell the truth.
And Luke Burbank.
Well, from what I hear, your internet history is never truly completely erased.
Well, panel, if you ever do decide to run for president, you can make the announcement on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Luke Burbank, Paula Poundstone, Pidgey. All right. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you back here next week. This is NPR.